It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
We're continuing our discussion with Jeremy Holden, Research Director of Media Matters, about CNN and NBC's plan to separately move forward with specials about Hillary Clinton. The Republican National Committee is upset and threatening to exclude the networks from, or to not participate in, 2016 debates on those networks. We want to hear your thoughts. The number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Jeremy, I wanted to ask you about looking back a little bit at a special from CBS. They were going to do a mini series on Ronald Reagan. First of all, are you familiar with this?
I am, yeah. It ended up running on Showtime, right?
Yeah, well, I know it didn't hit CBS.
That's right.
And as I understand it, it's because some right-wing activists, including the RNC, were charged that the portrayal of Ronald Reagan wasn't fair. And I'm wondering, in this case, you know, how much influence does a political party have on whether or not something like this, even after it's produced, will get on the air?
Well, Cynthia, I think that's a great question. And I think it gets to, again, why this is a problematic decision. When you look back at the controversy that erupted in 2003, you saw a very aggressive campaign by some voices on the right to shape the portrayal of Reagan in essentially something that was being produced by the entertainment side of CBS. And it became too hot for CBS. It shifted over to Showtime. And we already see that underway with the planned to do these Clinton projects, where there are some voices on the right that are trying to pressure the writers, pressure the producers into adopting a very specific and negative portrayal of Hillary Clinton. And it just, again, gets to the problems of going down this road. We've seen entertainment divisions buckle to right-wing pressure in the past. And I think you can look at what's a one-hour special that CNN put out this week on the Benghazi issue. It was very rooted in right-wing media. CNN has been clear that they're trying to reach out to a right-wing audience, and all of this just raises very serious questions about the independence of these films and whether, you know, that right-wing pressure could have an effect on the final product.
Well, what difference does it make today, given that Hillary Clinton is actually alive to see it and respond to it, whereas in 2003, you know, Reagan couldn't really speak for himself?
Well, and again, this gets to the question of why, you know, why is the timing of this matter? And both CNN and NBC are trying to capitalize on what they think is going to be a political campaign on the part of Hillary Clinton. And I guess that gets to the question of, you know, what ability does she have to then respond to the portrayal of her in a miniseries in the middle of, you know, what NBC assumes is going to be a presidential run? It's just hugely problematic in terms of the timing.
Let's take a call from Nancy in Madison. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, hi. Well, I was just going to comment on that movie that came out a while ago on Hillary Clinton. That was done by Citizens United, I believe. And I didn't know that the CNN movie was being put on by the right wing. And I was wondering if the NBC movie was also had the same, the same political focus. I was just going to add, the one thing is I think she always gets a lot of attention because she is a really powerful woman, and that's all. I'll listen. Thanks.
Just to clarify, Nancy, were you asking about the current production proposal about Hillary Clinton? It's not derived from the Republican Party or anything.
Oh, right. No, but the current. There, I guess I was confused. There's two movies by Hillary about
yep.
Hillary, Jason proposed, and one of them is...
One is a documentary.
Listen some more. Okay,
one's yep. One is a documentary, the other will be a biopic on NBC. But, Jeremy, what's your response to her comments there?
Well, I think, yeah, the idea here is that, you know, for all intents and purposes, it looks like CNN wants to do an honest documentary. The question is whether, you know, the political environment will allow them to do so. And I think the same thing with NBC. Certainly, both of these channels have the right to pursue this. And Hillary Clinton is a fascinating public figure. There's no question about that. This is about the wisdom of doing so and whether the blowback that their news divisions are going to get as they chase these ratings is worth the cost.
Let's go next to Rebecca in Milwaukee.
Hi. I just had a quick question. You were talking a little bit before about the difference between entertainment and politics. And I was just wondering, I mean, where do you think that line should be drawn? And do you think that we're doing a good enough job of drawing that line?
Jeremy?
Well, I think that's the central question. And look, these large companies, whether it's CNN, whether it's NBC, have to make that decision for themselves. And certainly, there is a legal distinction between NBC Entertainment and NBC News. The question is whether the audience sees that difference, whether they think of it as valid. And again, if there's going to be cross promotion, if there's going to be blowback, then it creates problems on the news side, and the question then becomes, is it worth the benefit on the entertainment side?
I'm wondering if we're selling the viewer short here. Can't the average viewer make the ultimate judgment call when it comes to distinguishing between the editorial side of a network and the creative side?
I think that, well, look, there are countless different types of viewers, and they're all going to approach this differently. I think viewers generally would probably give the entertainment side more of the benefit of the doubt, but I think when you look at trust in media numbers, they're low, and this type of decision-making, this type of chasing of the ratings isn't something that is going to help turn those numbers around.
So real quick, do you think CNN and NBC will ultimately go through with these projects?
Well, as of right now, it looks like they're going to. It's going to be interesting to see if the voices, particularly those that we're starting to hear at NBC News, as those grow louder, what type of pressure will that put on the parent company? I guess we're going to have to stay tuned for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeremy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jeremy Holden is the Research Director of Media Matters.
Coming up next on Central Time, we'll get a pep talk on how we can shake up our lives, bust out of routines, and do cool stuff. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
A lot of us might dream of breaking out of our daily work routine and starting our own business or just shaking up our lives in some significant way. But a lot of times it just takes too darn much money, energy, time. Those are often in short supply.
Our next guest faced all of those problems when attempting to open her dream restaurant, but was able to overcome them despite no prior experience in the restaurant business and no capital.
Now she's encouraging potential entrepreneurs to pursue their passions. She's written a new book with advice on how to do it without giving up our personal lives at the same time.
And we want to hear from you, too. Did you go out and pursue a dream of opening a business? What was the key to your success? And are you happy you did it? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org.
Mickey Agarwal is with us. She's a social entrepreneur, founder of a number of companies. Her book is Do Cool. SH*T. Henceforth, we may just say stuff there. subtitle, Quit Your Day Job, Start Your Own Business, and Live Happily Ever After. Mickey, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Hi.
So there's a lot of books, and I think you mentioned this in your book, there's a lot of books and advice out there that promise to put you on the path to success and happiness in your work and your life. Mm-hmm. What are you saying that's different than what you saw out there?
Yeah, so, you know, when I started thinking about starting a business, I just started, like, reading everything I could possibly put my hands on, and I read some great autobiographies from amazing entrepreneurs, and I read a bunch of how-to books. about starting a business that were so boring it like put me to sleep after page three. So I basically, you know, said there should be, you know, a really fun way to share, you know, your lessons and your stories, and give actual real tangible steps. And I felt like that was the part that was missing, the marriage of sort of great storytelling with real tangible takeaways. And so, you know, when you think about, you know, autobiographies, you read stories, you're like, okay, but so then you raise the money, but how did you do it? And what did you say in that meeting? And what did you do exactly to raise your first $25,000? Or what did you say to the New York Times when you cold called them to get them to write about you? Or how did you get the Food Network to follow you around for 4 months when you first started out and no one knew who you were? All these questions that people kept asking me over and over the years, you know, I realized that there really isn't, you know, a great how-to granular, you know, how to do things in a granular way from to go from step zero to step one.
Yeah, answer all those questions right now.
Yeah, and then but then also things like, you know, how to eliminate negative relationships in your life and how to bring on new inspiring friends in your life that actually, you know, inspires you to start something and actually supports you versus all these naysayers in everyone's lives. You know, there's so many things that people, you know, want to know how to do, and I feel like, you know, there really isn't that guide for people. And this guide is sort of the guide that I wish I had been given when I was first starting out.
Well, something that interested me in the book wasn't actually when you started your own business. It was when you wanted to have the time to try out for a soccer team.
Yeah.
And you worked and you faced, I think anybody would have this question when they want, if they wanted to do a side project, a business, or chase some personal dream. How do you go to your workplace and say, boss, can I get a little time off the clock to work on this stuff? How do you recommend somebody try to do that?
Right. So what I did was first of all, I worked my butt off at the job and made sure that everyone noticed. And so, you know, that they're like, oh, wow, you're doing a great job. And so once everyone's really psyched about your work and your work ethic, then you say, hey, listen, you know, I have a really great dream. And, you know, what's really great is to find your, you know, your direct boss and find out what their other side dreams are and their passions are and say, look, you know, I have this amazing opportunity to try out for something and to really pursue my passion project, and I will give my 100% to this job. You know, I'm asking for your blessing. And so I kind of asked for the blessing with them knowing that I was really doing a great job at my work. And you have to come back and you have to do a great job and you have to keep doing a great job, because if your work peters off, then obviously they're not going to allow you to continue to do their passion project. But if they're really happy with what you're doing at work, then they'll have nothing to say to you. And so that's what I did. You know, I kind of found the right person who understood my dream, and they backed me up. And this isn't investment banking when you're working 100 hours a week. And so I was able to leave twice a week to go and try out for, you know, I kind of also snuck my way there a little bit. But he didn't really know exactly how long I was going for. But, you know, you do what you have to do. You do what you have to do. And I think if there is a will, there is a way. I mean, it's a saying for a reason, right?
Well, can you talk about the importance of surrounding yourself with people who inspire you?
Yeah. So, you know, when you spend time with your friends. So I have a saying, which is like, you know, you're as good as the five closest friends you keep, right? So, you know, if your friends get drunk on weekends and, you know, talk about, you know, just watch sports or watch whatever dumb reality television, you know, that's going to be your life too, right? You're not going to be inspired when you walk away from those interactions. You're going to feel tired. You're going to go to bed. And it's not about people who are necessarily, you know, calling you names and making you feel bad. It's just about like how you feel. Are they adding value to your life? Are they actually making you question things? And are they making you, you know, want to be a better person and want to change things, you know, and talk about big ideas? And so for me, you know, I started asking myself a lot of those questions, you know, and I was like, wow, you know, I need to really think about the type of friends that I have, because time is limited. Time is the most, you know, it's a non-renewable resource, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really be careful with who you spend your time with. And, you know, so I just basically put together a list of people that inspired me on one side, and it could be one person, and then a list of people who kind of were depleting. So, which means that when you walk away from spending time with them, how do you really truly ask yourself how you feel? Do you feel tired, or do you feel engaged? Do you feel like you want to go out and start something, or do you feel like, man, I just want to go to bed? So once you start really looking at how you feel after you spend time with the people that you're surrounding yourself with, that's when you start making real change in your life. And you're going to want to say, no, I want more. I want more.
Well, who fell on your list and in what ways did they inspire you? What did you learn from them?
So, you know, I talk about always my first friend. He's always like so like, I can't believe you talk about me all the time. But my friend Graham was like the first guy I met when I was working in New York. And I met him in line, literally standing in line to a club. And we just got to talking because the line was really long. And I was 22 and I didn't know anybody. Like, so in the line, I just started talking to him. And he was the first entrepreneur I'd ever met. And he started this company called TreeHugger.com, which was now sold to Discovery Channel for millions of dollars. And, you know, he was the first person that kind of showed me the way, that there's another way. You don't have to be a banker, a doctor, a lawyer, in the traditional path. It was not necessarily a path for everyone, and that there is another way. And so he then introduced me to tons of entrepreneurs who then really, you know, inspired me to start something myself. So sometimes you don't know where you can meet these people, and you just have to kind of be out there and put yourself out there, and, you know, the people that you manifest will fall in your lap.
You know, I think a lot of us probably have either a built-in idea of what success means, and maybe it's what you mentioned, the doctor, lawyer, banker track, or on the other hand, maybe a lot of us haven't even thought about what a successful life would be. How do
Right.
we start evaluating what success means to us as individuals?
Well, I mean, it's so authentic to each person, right? So, you know, for me, it's you know, my definition of success changed over the years. You know, when I first graduated from college, it was freedom of you know, money and I financial freedom. And because I had tons of student loan debt and I didn't have much savings, I was coming out of college and I needed to make money. And then my definition of success changed to freedom of time. Like, I want to own my time. I want to be able to really do what I want to do when I want to do. I want to work my butt off when I want to, and I want to take time off when I want to. And now it's changed to, you know, I want it all. I kind of, you know, to reach my full potential. I mean, that's really what my definition of success is to, you know, really help people to, you know, I think I can really change the way women, you know, women interact with the world, especially in developing countries. There's a huge, you know, issue that's happening in the developing world that no one's talking about. It's taboo, and it's, you know, menstruating women in developing world. They have nothing to use. And anyway, it's a whole different thing. But I think that, you know, I want to live to my full potential. And that's sort of my definition of success today.
Let's take a call from Aaron in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi.
What's your story, Aaron?
Well, I a couple years ago, I worked as a salesman at a car dealership and was laid off after 12 months of working there and really couldn't find a job, anything I really wanted, and nothing really pays very well.
Yep.
And so I decided to start a little business that I actually started years ago when my son was a baby. Now they're all grown up, and I decided I'm going to make a go for it. And I started a board game company, Games and Puzzles. My first
That's
game
awesome.
This year was in the Mensa Mind Games competition, Tetragon 2. And I just That's released my first coloring book. It's a revolutionary new high-definition coloring book, Color Door County.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for sharing the story, Aaron. So he took a step like you did, Mickey, and started his own business. I mean, that's not for everyone, but how do you know if a new business, if entrepreneurship is the right thing for you?
Well, I personally think I relate new business for me, like starting something, and there has to be purpose behind it. You know, I can't be passionate about something for a really long time unless there was, you know, a real purpose. And so for me, my purpose is, you know, empowering women around the world, you know, for my underwear company, or supporting local farmers for my restaurant business, or it's really giving, you know, the next generation of young people a roadmap to start something of their own, which is what my my book talks about. And so it's really like everything I do and everything that's going to go forward has to have a mission attached to it, which keeps me driven. And I think that's it. I think the next generation of entrepreneurs are going to have a social, you know, relevance piece to that, because otherwise they're going to get bored. They're going to be like, what's the point? I just started this clothing line and that's it. You know, there has to be like a mission behind it to really keep them driven for a really, really long time. And so, you know, I think that for me is the most important thing is like, why are you doing it? And what is the mission behind your company?
We're talking with entrepreneur Mickey Agrawal, author of Do Cool, SH*T, or stuff, we'll say, for on the air. We want to hear from you. Did you follow your dream of opening a business, or did you go on into a line of work that you felt had mission, had a purpose, as Mickey was just talking about? Tell us about your experience, what worked for you, what advice you might share at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll be back right after the news. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation now with entrepreneur Mickey Agrawal. Her book is Do Cool, SH*T. We want to hear from you. Do you follow your dream of opening a business, or another dream that you thought about for years but finally shook yourself up to do it? Tell us, how did you get started? How did it go? Did it make you happier? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. 800-642-1234. Or if you changed your career because you felt like you needed more of a mission in what you did for a living. 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Mickey, you talked about what your passion is in life, what your mission is in the work you do. How do you suggest somebody, once they've figured out what that is, develops it and finds a way to put it into practice?
Right. So when I first started my first business, and again with zero experience and you know, nothing really to start with, I basically started a thing called, I created a thing called the Meeting of the Minds, where I brought together all of my smartest friends, but all from different industries. So it wasn't like I got a bunch of filmmakers together who all thought one way. I brought together like an accountant, a marketing person, an architect, an engineer, a designer, all like, you know, an investment banker, consultant, all these different people in different industries. And I brought them together in one room to do sort of a meeting of the minds brainstorm, where I had like 25 questions to ask, which was, you know, basically going from idea to business concept. And in like two different sessions, brainstorm sessions, meeting of the mind sessions, I came up with my whole business plan from having just an idea to an actual real tangible plan. And, you know, you can kind of, you know, get a collective of people together and cumulatively come up with a really, really great idea. It doesn't have to be just you on your own. And the way I kind of got everyone to come and do this for me and with me was by saying, hey, I'm going to organize a really fun event where dinner's free, everyone gets a free meal, it's in a really great apartment, in a really great setting, and you're going to have an opportunity to meet other really, really cool people. So for nothing else, for themselves, they're going to have a great night, free meal, in a beautiful apartment, meeting really cool people, and they'll get to talk about your idea. And so that's sort of the way I got people to come in and support my project. You know, and actually go from idea to business concept.
Now, if it's me in your position, I think I'd be pretty shy about, even with the bribe of a nice dinner, I think these are busy people. They don't want to waste their time helping me out. When you go to people and ask them for help with or without dinner, what's the reaction you get?
Well, that's the thing. You have to make it about them. It's like, you know, you have been handpicked by, you know, you've been handpicked to come to this meeting of the minds. You know, you're going to get an amazing meal, meet incredible people in a great setting. Like, this is like an honor for you to come, you know? And so you position in a place where they're like, wow, like, I'm really cool to be part of these, you know, 20 people who've been asked to come and do this. And so you don't make it about, can you guys come help me and do this? It's about, you have been handpicked to do this. And make it in that. And if you, it's all about framing, and it's about making it about them, not about you. Then you get whatever you want that way. It's pretty interesting, actually, the psychology behind that in the way you word things.
Well, a lot of first-time business owners make mistakes during their opening, and no launch is going to go perfectly.
For sure.
So instead of asking you how to prevent mistakes, I'll ask you, how do we recover from them once they've happened?
Oh, my God. Well, I've had so many mistakes. One of my biggest mistakes was, you know, I went and hustled. I rode my bicycle to every single, you know, publication, New York Times, Time Out, Daily Candy, everyone wrote about us too early. I didn't heed anyone's advice by doing a soft opening to iron out the kinks before I got press. I was just so excited that anyone was interested to actually write about my first business that I just went for it. And it was a giant disaster because people started calling and people started coming when I wasn't prepared. And so, you know, people waited 45 minutes for a pizza. It was just horrible. And so within, of course, New Yorkers are New Yorkers. They're like, screw this place. I'm never coming back. And so to bounce back from that, I mean, you know, the statistics are that 95% of restaurants close in their first year and 85% of restaurants close their second year. And most of the time it's because they're unprepared, they're operationally not sound, and they don't know what they're doing, which is basically where I was at. So my thing was like, do I be just one of the statistics and be one of the 95%, or do I hustle my way out of this? And so what I did was I just literally hand wrote these notes and printed them out so it looked like they were all handwritten and personally snuck into so many different buildings, 5,000 apartments, and flyered them all with these little notes, these little handwritten looking notes that said, hey, we've ironed everything out, you know, like I'm a young entrepreneur, I'm just starting out, and made it really human. And would love to have you guys come back. You know, this car, you know, gives you first drink on me. I went to amusement parks. I went to gyms and did tastings there, like free tastings. I went to any office that would, you know, let me come and set up a little table and do a tasting. And that's how I built my business back. You know, people at first who written me off were like, oh, you know, this girl's trying really hard. Like, let me help. Okay, fine. I'll give her another chance. You know what I mean?
Mickey,
and so, you know, ultimately we're all humans, and if we can make our business be human, then people respond.
Mickey, you have so much energy. I'm tired just thinking about how you did all this stuff. How, I mean, is this just like in you, or is this something you developed and worked on?
Well, actually, it was one of those, it's like raising money. Like I said, you know, it was such a hard thing for me to do, which was I went on these one-on-one meetings and I was super nervous and I wore my old banker suits and I looked like a complete, like, nervous wreck. And it's sort of like one of those things when you're like, oh my God, I have this great idea. When you explain it to your friends, you're so energized and you're so excited. And then the minute you meet an investor, you forget everything you're about to say. And then all the things you're supposed to say is wrong. And it just like, you have no answers to whatever. And so you're just like, man, how do I put myself in a place that I'm most me? And it was just trial by error, and I realized that it's kind of like dating a guy. Like, when you date a guy and you want to impress them, you know, what I used to do was I used to have him come watch me play soccer because I'm, like, good at soccer. And I'm like, hey, yeah, come watch me play soccer. I'm totally in my element, you know? And they'd be like, wow, this girl's really cool and she's really good. And so it's the exact same thing when raising money, when doing anything in business. It's how to put yourself in the place where you're most confidently you. And so that's what I did. So I started I realized that for me, I was most confident when I was, you know, hosting dinner parties at my house and doing storytelling nights. And so I started hosting fundraising dinner parties where I would have people come over, do a very similar thing like the Meeting of the Minds, free food, interesting atmosphere, you know, same model. And I just invited anyone who I thought had a little bit of extra money in their pockets. And that's what I did. So it's really, to me, it's about authenticity. And that's what I kind of discovered. It's like everyone's their own. Everyone's different. Some people might be better on one-on-one. Some people might be better in a group setting. Like, I'm definitely better in a group setting where I'm not, like, trying to pitch somebody, like, one-on-one in a suit. Like, I'd much rather be wearing, like, a really flowy dress and, like, be at my house and with my friends and then get people to really buy into my excitement when I'm actually truly me, right? So everyone has their own way of really showing their true selves. And I think if you put yourself in that place, then that's when you can do the most damage. And I realize that that's damage isn't good damage. And that's what I kind of realized over the years, that that's what you have to do.
Let's take a call from Stephanie in Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I am just calling to tell you a little bit about my business story. I have a mobile dog grooming business out of Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And I started my grooming business 14 and a half years ago when my son was a baby. I moved back here from Portland, Oregon, and I didn't want to put him in daycare, so I opened up a business and brought him with me, and he tooled around in a walker while I took customers, and now I've evolved into I have two mobile dog grooming units, and I kind of travel around, and he's almost 15, and it's allowed me a lot of freedom and time to do what I want and raise him, and it's worked out really
good
well.
Stephanie, good for you. That's awesome.
Thanks for your call. And Mickey, what I heard from Stephanie there is she really tailored what she wanted to do with her life around the reality of her life, raising her baby.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. And it's, again, it comes back to authenticity, like what makes you most happy, what makes you most, you know, put yourself in a place that makes you the most you, right? And it's a weird thing to say, and it's not woo-woo. It's actually like, it's true. Like, you are most happy when you're in a place where you're most confidently you, right? So
what sort of cool stuff do you want to get done now?
Well, so like I said, now I've just launched my new company called Thinks, which is we've invented a pair of underwear that's leak and stain resistant for girls to wear during their monthly periods. I mean, how many pairs of underwear have you thrown away, you know, every single month, or stained, forgot to change your tampon because you're really busy, like a million. And it's like, the question was, how is it possible that thousands of years have gone by and millions of girls have had this issue and no one's doing anything about it, no one's innovating a pair of underwear. And so we invented a pair of underwear that does the job, that's beautiful, breathable, washable. You can't even tell that it's anything but a pair of underwear, but it has these special, like, properties, and we've patented it. But then the second part of it is that, you know, girls in the developing world, they currently use sticks, sleeves, mud, rags. Nobody's talking about it. It's taboo. 100 million girls drop out of school every year because of their periods. It's crazy. And so we basically partnered up with an organization that produces washable cloth pads for girls. So for every pair of underwear we sell here, we fund 7 washable cloth pads that goes back to a girl in a developing country so she can go back to school and work without worrying. So we're really excited about this project. I think it's going to really change the way girls interact with the world during their time of the month, and it's just not going to be something that they think about ever again.
All right. Well, Mickey, thank you so much for being with us today.
Awesome.
That's Mickey Agrawal. She's a social entrepreneur. Her book is Do Cool, SH*T, we'll call it Stuff. Quit your day job, start your own business, and live happily ever after. You can learn more going to a link at the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up next, Noah Ofshinsky joins us for a roundup of the top state news stories. I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. Coming up after 5, a new way to get involved with the arts by subscribing and getting your very own basket of art stuff. We'll talk about community-supported arts later in the show.
First, a look at this week's Wisconsin news. Each Friday at this time, WPR's Assistant News Director Noah Ofshinsky joins us to track what's going on in the state.
Noah, thanks for joining us again this week.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Rob.
Well, a lot of people around the country are watching the progress of the national health care law, Obamacare, as a lot of people call it. There's some developments here in Wisconsin now.
Yeah. Ever since the law was passed, I think there's been a lot of questions as to how it was going to work. And there wasn't a lot of information out there. You know, insurance companies have been keeping information close to their chest for a while. State governments were keeping information close to their chest. This week, we actually have some solid information, if you would believe it, Rob. Solid information about how this is going to work in Wisconsin. And what we found out this week was that 13 insurance companies around Wisconsin have cleared really the first hurdle to participate in this new federally run insurance exchange program, which of course is the online marketplaces where people will be able to go and purchase healthcare.
And this is if I'm a person without insurance, and does it apply to small businesses too? Who all can jump in on this?
Right. It depends on the company. Some companies will be offering both individual insurance and insurance for small business owners. Other insurance companies will be offering one or the other. But really, you know, this is the first time we've got a list of the actual mm-hmm. insurance companies who are going to be participating. It includes Dean Health Plan, Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, Arise, and Mercy Care HMO.
So these are some big deal players in the industry.
These are
in the state.
Among the biggest players here in the state of Wisconsin.
And now one key phrase you mentioned, first hurdle. This isn't a done deal yet.
No, unfortunately, it isn't. They still have to complete a federal review. And of course, like so many things in this world, they have to sign a contract before they can participate in the exchange. And right now, I think the government is hoping that these exchanges will be fully in place by January.
That is, as these things move, that's not that far off.
No, it's not. It's going to be amazing how quickly we get to January. And of course, there are a lot of questions out there and still quite a bit of confusion. But now at least we can say that, you know, these insurance companies are likely going to be the ones that will be offering this insurance.
Well, another story in the news this week, Governor Scott Walker and his two-time challenger, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, may have something to agree on.
I know. Cue drumroll.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Actually, and unfortunately, it's as a result of very sad circumstances. Mm-hmm. But there is a chance that the state may soon see a mandatory minimum sentence for those who illegally possess a gun. Now, this all came out just a few days ago at a press conference with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, as you alluded to, and Milwaukee's police chief, Edward Flynn. And they basically called for this minimum sentence. And this came after a series of just very violent days in Milwaukee with a lot of gun crimes. And not long after they had that press conference, Governor Walker himself said not only is he supportive of this kind of mandatory minimum sentence, but he also said that the legislature would probably be supportive of it as well.
And then has this been introduced in the legislature? Is it in the works?
It's in the works right now. There is one bit of legislation that's already being drafted, or it's in the process of being drafted. Republican Senator Alberta Darling is drafting a bill that would impose a 3-year prison sentence for illegal gun possession. So that's in process.
And the usual objection to any kind of gun laws is we don't want to infringe on the rights of legal gun owners. Is that the key, that this is people who are already barred from owning guns for one reason or another?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that may come out, you know, and again, this happens with anything that, you know, may cause the Department of Corrections budget to go up. You know, this kind of thing, you know, could end up being very expensive for the state. It could be. I don't know that for a fact. But like most sentences, you know, there's a dollar sign attached to every prisoner who goes into our system. For their what we call three hots and a cot, you know, the meals and the lodging. And that all costs money. And so I suppose it would remain to be seen how many people would be caught up under this new mandatory minimum and how much that would cost the state.
And were Chief Flynn and Mayor Barrett looking for other things from the state as well?
Yeah, they were actually, in order to sort of stem the tide of this violence, they were also asking the state for $500,000 in matching funds to help pay for police overtime.
Has there been a response to that yet?
Or? Yeah, Governor Walker was sort of cold to that proposal. You know, he said that if the state decided to do that, then there essentially would be a long line of mayors around the state looking for those kinds of matching funds. And I think he basically suggested that the state wasn't willing to do that, or at least his administration.
So we'll be tracking the progress of that request and of this possible minimum sentence in the weeks to come, I imagine.
Yeah, and I would say probably a piece of very rare bipartisan legislation.
Well, it's Friday, and it's a good time to talk about fish in Wisconsin. There's some fish news, maybe some good news out there?
Dare I say good news for anglers and their families. You know, so often when we talk about the environment in the state, it's often sort of doom and gloom. But in fact, several fish consumption advisories have been lifted in sort of the Fox River area, or, you know, around Green Bay. And that's largely because of a cleanup of PCBs and other contaminants that the fish consumption advisories have been lifted.
And what's changed? This has been a conscious effort to try to clean this up.
Yeah, there's been a lot of cleanup. Before, the DNR advised people not to eat any white bass from the lower section of the Fox River. Now they've actually lifted that and said, you know, now maybe 6 meals per year. For the Green Bay area and the lower Fox River, that those 6 meals now might be acceptable.
Okay. Any other areas that we're seeing a lifting of the ban or the advisory, I should
say? Yeah. 5 consumption advisories for Lake Superior have also been relaxed, and so has one advisory in Sawyer County due to lower mercury levels.
Okay. Now, that's good news. Anything else going on? Any steps back elsewhere in the state?
There has been a few step backs. In fact, the bad news is that 3 other lakes in the northern part of the state have had enough mercury problems that consumption warnings there have actually been raised.
Hmm. So an issue that the DNR is going to be tracking over the years, obviously, isn't going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, it's not. Contamination is here, and it will be here with us for quite a while. I'd urge all the listeners, for the specifics. Obviously, I just sort of gave you a taste of what's happening here. For specifics, for specific consumption advisories, I'd urge listeners to go and consult the DNR website.
You know, to be smart, if we put a link to that on the Central Time Facebook page.
I like it.
But it'll be done. And then a lot of the big news for much of the state, it missed us here in Madison. A pretty nasty storm came through a lot of Wisconsin.
Yeah, this was sort of a nasty, really nasty weather week. It was mainly in central and northeastern Wisconsin Tuesday night and into Wednesday morning. The National Weather Service actually yesterday confirmed that there were five tornadoes.
Five?
In total.
I'd only heard three, so they've found five.
Yeah, now. I heard two and then three, and actually they're confirming five in total actually touched down. In that area.
And some sad stories from this.
Yeah, obviously, in addition to, there was severe damage to a church, crops, barns, at least one house was severely damaged, and really most tragic. Actually, a town chairman from that area was killed in Marinette County, and another man was injured as they were clearing debris from a road after the storm, and they were struck by a vehicle.
So what's the response to this now?
Yeah, the Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson actually met with Governor Walker. Governor Walker traveled in the area and took a tour this week, a tour of the damage. And the county executive asked him for support from the Wisconsin National Guard to help sort of clean up some of that storm debris.
And this wasn't the first time Wisconsin was hit by weather this summer. Northern Wisconsin earlier in June.
Yeah.
Some updates on that, I think.
Yeah, we had some flooding earlier in June, and some of it was really quite damaging. We heard this week, and Governor Walker's office confirms that federal officials have in fact declared eight Wisconsin counties and an American Indian tribe as eligible for federal disaster aid as a result of that severe flooding. And I'll just give you sort of a brief list here. Mm-hmm. FEMA has issued a major disaster declaration for Ashland, Bayfield, Crawford, Grant, Iowa, Richland, St. Croix, and Vernon counties, as well as the Red Cliff.
So what does that mean for those counties and for the tribe?
It means that this declaration allows local governments in those jurisdictions to apply for money to offset the repair costs to infrastructure and buildings.
Noah, thanks a lot for joining us again.
It was great to be here. Thanks, Rob.
That was WPR's Assistant News Director, Noah Ovshinsky.
Noah joins us each Friday to round up the Wisconsin News of the Week and look ahead at what's coming up next. We want to see you participate in the show. We've got a couple special ways to do it, a couple of special segments you may have heard. One is Curious Wisconsin, where we answer the little mysteries that you may encounter in Wisconsin. Why there's an M on a big hill near Platteville, or yesterday, why we have a Gator Fest in Wisconsin. I think you said you had one,
I
Cynthia.
Suggested one. Yeah, there is an old hotel in Maribel, Wisconsin that growing up in the area was sort of legendary, and we were told it was haunted. And just this week, with all those storms that came through the area, unfortunately, the structure did not withstand the winds. It withstood two fires and who knows what else, but I would love if you could investigate the history of that hotel and maybe some of the lore around it.
All right, so that's Curious Wisconsin. We also do Hidden Wisconsin. We want to hear from people who are behind the scenes doing important jobs that maybe we take for granted or don't know what they do. You can volunteer yourself for that, volunteer someone you know, or suggest a Curious Wisconsin segment.
And you can do that at 1-855-683-5422. That's 855-683-5422, or email your suggestions to centraltime@wpr.org.
And that 855 number is toll free. I didn't know that. That was new to me. Coming up after the news, we're going to hear about a new effort to connect people to the arts. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.